The Life and Strange Adventures of Robinson Crusoe of York, Mariner, who lived many years on an uninhabited island on the coast of America, near the mouth of the great river Orinoco, having been cast on shore by shipwreck, wherein many perished, with an account how he was at last as strangely delivered by pirates. Written by himself.
I was born in the city of York in the year 1632. If ever a man was born to be his own destroyer, then I was he. Against the good advice of my father, I went to sea. I forgot the terror that possessed me in my first voyage, and voyaged into danger and calamity again. Even after deliverance from the Turks and landing safe in the Brazils, where I made my fortune, my heart still yearned to wander. But I was yet a young man.
Ut a garrafa de vino, chefe!
Tell me another of your stories, Signor Robinson.
What manner of story would you have, Mr. Wells? Trading with heathens on the Guinea coast, captured by a Turkish rover?
Tell me about trading in Africa.
There is gold dust, and it can be traded for trinkets.
What kind of trinkets?
Beads, toys, knives, scissors, bits of glass and the like. And not just gold dust, Mr. Wells. Guinea spice, elephant's teeth.
And Negroes, Signor Robinson? You can try them for trinkets?
Why is your interest so drawn to Negroes?
Signor Robinson, you must swear to keep what I say secret.
I do so swear. Now tell me what it is you have in mind.
Signor, you have done well since you arrived in Brazil. You have built up your plantation, and like the other planters, your plans for expansion are hampered by the lack of servants to help you.
True.
Supposing you had servants, as many as you desired.
What are you proposing?
Some planters have a mind to fit out a ship to go to Africa, to buy Negroes.
Such trade may not be entered into without the permission of the King of Spain or Portugal.
This would be a secret trade. There would be no public selling. The cargo would be divided up among the planters according to their investment. You would manage the trading part of the enterprise. Your reward would be a share of the cargo.
That is a fair proposal.
Of course. You may not wish to go to sea again, Signor Robinson. Why should you place yourself in jeopardy? You have wealth, prosperity...
and no one to share it with. I have but one servant, and he cannot speak more than three words. I might as well be cast away on some desolate island for all the comforts I enjoy. I work and repose in isolation.
So, you will consider our proposal?
Yes, Mr. Wells. I will.
Had I but considered judiciously. But I was hurried on and obeyed blindly the dictates of my fancy rather than my reason.
She is indeed a fine ship.
You are certain of this enterprise?
Don't try and counsel me out of it. It is agreed. You will manage my plantation until my return, and if I should miscarry, I have made a will which you will discharge.
Take your farewells, Mr. Crusoe. The tide's full. We're about to cast off.
Thank you, Captain. Go on, Mr. Wells, or you'll have to swim for it.
Bon voyage, Signor Crusoe. And good luck.
Cast off, Warren.
Cast off, Warren.
Let go aft.
Let go aft.
Look by me now. Set course. Forward by northeast.
We present Robinson Crusoe by Daniel Defoe. Dramatized for radio by Steve Chambers. With Roy Marsden as Robinson Crusoe and Tom Bevan as young Crusoe. Episode 1.
You wanted to see me, Captain?
Yes, Mr. Crusoe. The land you can see off our port beam is Cap San Agostino.
What is our course?
We can make northeast for the Isle of Fernando Noronha and then east to Africa. Or we can act with caution and return to Brazil.
Why?
The first mate has a fever. The tossing of the ship exaggerates his delirium.
We cannot turn back for one man.
Then turn back for all the men. A fear for the weather.
But this is just a cap full of wind.
Aye. But see the sky in the southwest. I reckon that's more than a cap full. And it's coming this way.
But then run before it. Come, man, we cannot return before we've begun.
I never met a man so determined upon making his fortune.
I am intent on adventure, not gain, Captain. Next time I look upon the coast of Brazil, I shall be returning in triumph.
Very well, Mr. Crusoe. All in the mainsail.
Shorten the jib.
Aye, aye, sir.
Hurry up there. They saw those guns that last tight. Come on, you lads. Prepare the nerves.
The captain was correct in his judgment. That night, the ship was overtaken by a hurricane, which blew us before it for several days and nights.
Well, mister, are you satisfied now?
The storm is abating.
Well, maybe, maybe not, but we're blown miles to the north. Our ship's leaky and disabled. Our first mate's dead and the ship's boys washed overboard. I say we must turn about and make for Brazil.
Show me a chart. What's our position?
Near as I can measure, 12 degrees of latitude north.
And longitude?
Off the Great River, Orinoco. We need assistance, Mr. Crusoe.
Then stand off and head north.
Oh, where to?
The Caribbean Islands, Barbados. There we can gain assistance from English settlers, refurbish our ship and continue our voyage.
Ah, it is a possibility.
It is as far to go on as to return.
Very well. We are in God's hands now, Mr. Crusoe.
We set a nor' by nor'east course, but the storm's abatement did not last, and he rose up again mightier than before and carried us with the same impetuosity westward, away from our course.
What land can it be, Captain?
I know not, but that it is far out of the way of human commerce. We're grounded on a sandbank. Make peace with yourself and your maker, Mr. Crusoe. The sea will break us into pieces.
Lower the deck boat.
That will be overwhelmed.
If we stay on board, the sea will destroy us.
The sea will destroy us, whatever happens.
If we take the boat, we can try for the shore. Hear that? Lend a hand here. That's it.
Yeah.
Come on, Captain. It's worth a try.
Oh, very well. All right, lad. Climb in.
Aye.
Everyone ready?
Aye.
Cut the ropes and commit yourself to God's mercy. Here goes. Roll for the shore before the sea pounds us into matchwood against our own hull. That's it. Keep rowing. Oh, when we get to the shore, we'll be dashed to pieces, whether it's rock or sand.
I wish I'd taken your advice, Captain.
I wish we had a sail, Mr. Crusoe, but wishes are of little use to us now.
Look! Look!
Lord, help us!
What is it, Captain?
Look behind you, Mr. Crusoe. See it now!
Mercy of heavens! It is as big as a mountain. Is that a wave?
It is the coup de grace!
Must swim. Keep swimming. Can't breathe. Must breathe. That's better. Now swim. Swim.
How long I swam, I know not. The sea raised me up and then overwhelmed me again, rushing me this way and that until I thought I must drown.
Drowned. I am beached. But I may be drowned if I stay here. I must get out of the water. I must get out of the water. Sand in my mouth. Water.
have such a thirst. The storm. The storm is gone, and with it the day. And I am not drowned. Oh, happy deliverance. Happy, happy circumstance.
Cast upon a barren shore bounded by forest and steep hills, I gave no thought to my plight. I was consumed by the joy of my deliverance. Then I remembered my shipmates and called to them in case any were cast ashore with me.
Ahoy there! Ahoy! Hello! Is there anyone there? Ahoy! I must find water.
My thirst plagued me and caused me such discomfort that I was driven to give up my calling and look for a stream. I walked about a furlong along the beach.
Water. Fresh water. God, heaven. Oh, water.
My thirst assuaged, I looked about me and considered my situation anew.
Ahoy there! Ahoy! Is there anyone there?
Can it be that all my comrades are drowned, and there is not one soul saved but me? Am I cast away alone?
It was true, for I never saw any of them afterwards, nor any sign of them, except three of their hats, one cap, and two shoes that were not fellows.
Shadows lengthen, and I am cold. My clothes are wet. I need a place to sleep out of the way of marauding beasts. One of those trees, perhaps. If I can climb high enough, I pray my pursuers lack the talent to follow me.
I scrambled up into it, though not without some discomfort, for it was prickly and ill-shaped, but finally I was wedged. I put a little tobacco in my mouth to stave off hunger, and in a short while, being excessive fatigued, fell into a deep sleep. I awoke in the morning, descended from my perch, and tried hailing my comrades again.
Hello! Hello! Ahoy there!
Great heavens! The ship! Still intact! And stuck fast by the look of her. If we had remained aboard. The sea is calm enough today, and the ship close enough with the ebb tide to swim to. I must try and get to the ship.
In the calm water, the distance was easy swum. The ship was stuck fast and stood high out of the shallow water. I swam round her twice, looking for a way aboard, until I spied a rope hanging down her stern.
If I can reach it. That's it. Now, climb up the side and over. Ahoy! Hello! Is anyone aboard? It is I, Robinson Crusoe! No one. I cannot delay. I must survey the ship and take what I can use. Start with the forecastle. Her head is down. By the looks of her, she is bulged. Aye, the forward hold is full of seawater, and any provisions herein spoiled. But her quarter is higher up the sandbank and may be dry. And the bread room is in the poop. Bread. Biscuit.
I crammed my pockets with biscuit and my mouth with bread, and hurried on in my search, for there was no time to lose. I held open the door of the great cabin, where I found rum. Mm.
Mm. Oh, that's good. Oh, what's this? Two rusty swords. Take that, you blackguard! And two fowling pieces and a pistol. I am my own army now. All I need is ammunition and powder. And a boat to get my provisions ashore. I must find a boat.
I searched the ship from stem to stern, but there was no boat to be found.
I have found what I know will be very necessary to me. And now, for want of a boat, I may lose it again. Must joy always be followed by bitterness? It is in vain to sit still and wish for what is not to be had. There are several spars lying about, and a spare topmast. I must work with these.
I flung as many spars as I could manage for their weight overboard, and lashed them fast together at both ends in the form of a raft. I then emptied three seamen's chests of clothes and lowered them down upon my craft and filled them with provisions.
Bread, rice, three Dutch cheeses, five pieces of dried goat's flesh and a small quantity of corn, two kegs of gunpowder, one of shot, two powder horns, the carpenter's chest and one set of clothes. The rest I must leave behind, for I am well freighted. The sea is smooth and calm. The tide is rising and setting into the shore. And what wind there is blows in my way. So I must set to paddling.
I made landfall in a small creek and landed my cargo safely, though it took much effort. I constructed a tent out of a tarpaulin and stowed my perishables inside. Then I built a barricade of my chests and kegs around it.
I know not whether this land is continent or island, inhabited or full of wild beasts. I shall climb to the ridge behind the beach and then the steep hill beyond, which should afford a view of the country.
I climbed for some time and with great labour and difficulty got to the top. There, for the first time, I spied the extent of my domain.
So, my hermitage is an island, environed every way with the sea, and as it would seem, barren, except for myself and wild beasts, of which I have seen none. Still, there is an abundance of fowls, whose kinds I know not, and which may or may not be eaten. The sun is low. I should return.
I walked back down to my camp and held a council of my thoughts.
The ship is my salvation, but the first storm that blows will break her in pieces. I must set aside all other tasks until I have got everything out of her that will be useful to me. Heavens, look at that great bird perching. I may discover whether it is eatable or not. Hold still, my beauty, while I take aim. Bless my soul. I do believe it is the first gun fired on this island since the creation of the world. It will not be the last, God willing. Now, what kind of creature have I killed? Looks like some kind of hawk.
Thus cheered, I wended my way back to my camp, which was, as I had left it, unmolested, apart from two hares which ran out of the tent as I approached. I plucked my hawk, roasted it over a fire, and ate it, washed down with rum. Mm.
Oh, that is good. Well, perhaps I may prosper here after all. Yes, perhaps I shall.
The foolishness of my optimism was revealed to me as I lay down to sleep. The darkness was full of strange noises, and I was exceeding lonely. I could not help but reflect both on the willfulness that had brought me hither and my father's strictures, which in my youth I had ignored.
Why, Robinson, are you so set on such a course?
I do not know why, Father. I just know that my heart demands that I go to sea.
The sea is for men of desperate fortunes who go abroad and make themselves famous in undertakings out of the common road.
But that is what I want.
Yours is the middle station, Robinson, which I have found by long experience is the best station in life.
I do not wish for the middle station, Father. I desire adventure.
Listen to me. I left Bremen and came to England and settled down. I changed my name from Kreuznauer to Crusoe, yes, and made a good life,
yes,
here.
I know, but that was an adventure.
The calamities of life are shared among the upper and lower part of mankind, but the middle station, that has the fewest disasters, the least vicissitudes. Yeah, they are not subjected to so many distempers and uneasiness, either of body or mind, as those who live viciously.
But I am unhappy to remain as I am.
If you go to sea, you will be the most miserable wretch that ever lived. You will break your mother's heart. I beg you, as a father, do not play the young man. I will do well for you and help you if you stay here.
And if I do not?
God will not bless you. I gave the same advice to your brother, but he went away and was killed. To what purpose?
All right, Father. I am persuaded. I shall not go against your wishes.
You promise that you will not go abroad?
Yes, I promise, Father.
Then I will tell your mother directly. Molly! Molly! The boy seems sense at last! Molly!
How often have I reflected upon that discourse? My father had spoken his piece, and for him the matter was closed. Sometime afterwards, I spoke to my mother.
Oh, Robinson, you would try the patience of a saint.
Can I help it if my thoughts are so entirely bent on seeing the world?
Yes, you can.
Mother, I am now 18. It is too late for me to go apprentice to a trade or clerk to an attorney, and if I did, I should never serve out my time.
How do you know? You've never tried it.
I shall never settle to anything with resolution enough to go through with it until I have experienced my desire. Speak to my father.
He will not listen.
If he were to consent to just one voyage, that's all. Just
you
one.
You will break his heart.
And when I come home, if I do not like it, I promise I will never go to sea again and will work doubly hard to recover whatever progress I may have lost ashore.
It is of no purpose to speak to him.
Well, just ask him. Please?
He knows very well where your interests lie, and so do I. You will never have our consent to your hurt and ruin. He loves you very much, you know.
I'm sorry, Mother.
He was so pleased when you said you would not go. He laughed and gathered me in his arms and swung me round.
It's all right. I won't go. I swear.
You don't mean it.
I do. I do.
But my resolve waned as before. I broke my promise and their hearts and went to sea. And as a consequence of ignoring their good advice, I was cast ashore on my desert island with little comfort and less hope. I spent the next few days on my island as I had planned on my journey down from the hilltop. I visited the ship and plundered every usable thing. By the 13th morning, I had been 11 times on board and was bent upon going another, but the sky was hazy and a wind blew. Still, it did not deter me. When the tide was ebbed, I made my way aboard, and although I thought I had rummaged every cabin, still found a locker with four drawers that I had missed before.
Hello. What's this? Oh, knives. Good ones by the looks of them. And forks. I shall be able to entertain my guests most royally. Three razors and a pair of large scissors. Well, three drawers and three finds. So, what of the last drawer? Money. Oh, drug, what are you good for? European coin, some Brazil, pieces of eight, some silver. One of these knives is worth all this heap. Useless. May as well leave it here. But it is money after all. It may be of use someday. Now, to make my raft.
That night I lay in my tent with my wealth all around me, but did not sleep much. The wind blew very hard, and the rain fell in torrents, and in the morning...
The ship is gone. I am truly alone. I must find a place where I can secure myself against attack. This camp is no good. Too close to the sea and too far away from fresh water.
I climbed the ridge and found a little plain on the front of a small hill.
Bounded at the rear by a sheer face, like a house side, and with a small hollow at the base, like the entrance of a cave. The plain provides a good view of the sea, and facing north-northwest. It will shade me from the heat of the day. This shall be my castle.
My first endeavour was to construct a stockade made from stakes driven into the ground and lashed together with cables from the ship. The entrance was not by a door, but by a short ladder which could be drawn up from the inside like a drawbridge. Inside my compound, I built me a large tent with a smaller one inside. Into my large tent, I brought all my supplies. When this was done, I cut into the rock of the hillside and enlarged the hollow so that it became a cave and used it as a cellar to my tent. I did not spend all my time upon this work. Each day I went abroad with my gun, as well to divert myself as to see if I could kill anything fit for food, and to explore and survey my island. This regularity of activity did not apply to my thoughts, which plunged into misery and soared into hope with great suddenness and frequency.
Damnation! Cast away on a desert island all alone. Such misery must be a determination of heaven that I shall spend all my life here in this desolate place. My father was right. What is that? Sounds like... It is. A goat. It's a goat. Here, goat. Come to Robinson. Here. Come to Robinson. Come here. Come there. Damnation. Come here.
I ran after it, but it was too swift and sure-footed. But the discovery cheered me and caused me to reflect again.
Yes. I am in a desolate situation. But remember, 11 shipmates went into that boat. Where are the 10? Why were they not saved and you lost? What would be my case if I had to live in the condition in which I first came ashore? Indeed, I should give thanks to God as I return to my castle. Yes.
To help my reason master my despondency, I took pen and parchment and drew up my state of affairs in writing, setting good against evil in the form of a ledger.
Now, on the evil side of my ledger, I am cast upon a horrible desolate island, void of hope and recovery. But on the good side, I'm alive and not drowned as all my comrades were. On the evil side, I am singled out and separated from all the world to be miserable. But on the good side, I am singled out and spared, and he that saved me can deliver me from this condition. I am banished from mankind, but I am not starved or without sustenance. I have no soul to speak to or relieve me, but God wonderfully preserved the ship, so I could get so many necessary things as will either supply my wants or enable me to supply myself for as long as I may live. So, although I am in distress, I am well preserved with what I require for my survival. And I think I can say that there is no condition in the world so miserable, but that we may always find something to comfort ourselves from and be thankful for. What was that? Lightning! If it hit my tent, I may survive, but not if it hit my gunpowder.
My gunpowder was stored in two large barrels side by side under a tarpaulin outside my cave. The possibility of its combustion spurred me into action.
I must separate the barrels. Without gunpowder, I would perish.
The night and the following day was spent in a fever of activity. I separated the barrels and then powder from each barrel, laying a little and a little in parcels which I hid, some in my cave and some up and down in dry holes among the rocks, so that whatever might come, it might not all take fire at once.
My father was right. I am the most miserable wretch that ever lived. I wish I had never put to sea at all. Never boarded that gangplank in Hull so many years ago.
How now, young Bob? I warrant you're feeling frighted.
I'm dying, Jack.
Dying? From what?
I have a terrible sickness.
Oh, you're just getting your sea legs, that's all. Every sailor goes through it.
This is different. It's worse than seasickness.
Have you ever been ill from the sea before?
You know this is my first voyage.
Then how would you, a freshwater sailor, know what is correct and what is false?
I know that I have never been so ill in all my life.
I warned you. But you would not listen, so keen were you to come on board.
I swear that I shall never go to sea again if God spares me.
He will spare you, Bob.
The wind blows like a demon, and I've never seen the sea so high. It must surely overwhelm us.
This is nothing but a capful of wind, Bob.
A capful? It is a terrible storm.
Give us a good ship and sea room, and we sailors think nothing of a squall of wind like this, Bob.
Oh, it can be worse than this.
Oh, much, much worse. You'll see. You'll feel better in a couple of days.
Well, Jack may have lost his reason, but I have not.
The wind blew all that day, and I remained wretched. By the next morning, I felt improved. The wind began to ease, and with it my torment. Evening brought a sunset across a calm, clear blue sea.
Well, Bob, how do you feel now?
Better, Jack. Much better.
And how do you like the sea now?
I don't think I've ever seen anything so beautiful as this sunset. How can it change so quickly?
Ah, that's the sea for you. Charming one moment, raging the next. Still set on giving it up and going back to your father?
I never said that.
Oh, I think you did. You were praying with all your might, you were that frighted.
I wasn't.
You thought you were dying.
I didn't really.
Can you stomach some punch? Or is your belly still too sore?
Give it here.
Hold your horses, Bob. Let's have a toast before we drink.
To what shall we toast?
Fair wind and a calm sea.
Aye then.
To a fair wind and a calm sea.
So I drank the punch and went the old way of all sailors and was made drunk. And in one night's wickedness drowned all my repentance. The sea was returned to its smoothness. The hurry of my thoughts was forgotten and the current of my former desires returned. In short, with drink and companionship, I forgot my prayers and made as complete a victory over conscience as any young fellow could desire. Some months after the fever of my gunpowder separation, I made a startling discovery on my way back from hunting.
What are those green shoots? What? It looks like barley. Growing here, outside my stockade. 12 years. It is very like English barley. Maybe God has miraculously caused this grain to grow without seed, purely for my sustenance. Can this be so? That he would cause such a miracle to occur on my account? Good Lord, forgive me, for I have ignored you and your commandments.
For several days I believed I was blessed by Providence and wandered over those parts of the island I had been before, looking for other storks.
It is strange. The only corn I have found is outside my stockade. Hold still, my beauty. Robinson needs you for his dinner. What's that? A young kid. Oh, I must have shot its mother. Oh, it is too young. I must put it out of its misery. Oh, damnation. My powder sack is empty. Go away. Go away. Shoo.
Despite my attempts to frighten the young goat, it followed me all the way to my stockade, where it started to examine my barley.
Get away from there, or I'll shoot! Get away!
I shouted at the poor animal, waving my gun and powder bag, the more to frighten it. Then it dawned on me.
I filled this sack when I split up my powder store after the lightning. I remember it was empty except for a few rotten husks, which I shook out over the wall of my stockade. And those rotten husks became my miracle. So that's it. And I thought it was divine providence.
I carefully saved these ears of corn and resolved to sow them in the next season, hoping in time to have enough to supply me with bread. The 12 grains of corn should remain unspoiled and grow when all the rest were destroyed was really the work of Providence. And in truth, I ought to have been as thankful as if it had been miraculous. Neither did I give thanks for the kid that followed me home and became tame. I ignored the lessons of Providence as I had before, when I forgot the terror of my first voyage and sailed on into more terror.
What are you doing, Jack?
Writing to me, sweetheart.
In the midst of a storm? What do you write?
My goodbyes. I may never see her again.
Why are you so concerned?
I do not like this weather.
But we ride at anchor off Yarmouth Roads. Surely we are safe here.
The wind is onto the shore and very strong. We may be driven from our anchorage at any moment and dashed onto rocks.
So this is more than a capful?
Much more. I fear I shall not survive it. Hello? What's that?
Pull hands on deck! Pull hands on deck! Pull hands to the pumps!
What's happening?
Captain slipped anchor.
Why?
Some white colliers are running before the wind. The captain's worried they'll dash against us. He's firing the gun to warn people and shout about distress.
Heavens.
We've sprung a leak in the main hold. All hands on deck!
Aye, aye, mister.
You too, Bob.
I helped pump and did so heartily for a long time.
Abandon ship!
Come on, Bob. The ship is being driven onto the rocks. We'll be lost with it if we do not hurry.
We abandoned ship and rowed towards the shorelight. We had not been more than a quarter of an hour out of our ship than we saw her founder. But we made the shore safe and were made most welcome by those Yarmouth people who took us in. Next day, refreshed and fed, I met with Jack in a tavern.
Why, Jack, are you not elated? You'll see your sweetheart again.
Do you go home to York, Bob?
No, I shall travel on to London and find me a new ship.
You ought never to go to sea again. You ought to take this for a plain token that you are not to be a seafaring man.
Why, Jack, will you go to sea no more?
My father and all my family are seafarers. It is my calling and my duty.
Then maybe it is mine.
You made this voyage for a trial. Heaven has given you a taste of what to expect if you persist.
But I have this strange passion to go to sea, despite all reason to the contrary.
And perhaps this has befallen us because of you, Bob. Go back to your family and forget the sea.
I cannot.
I would not set foot on the same ship as you again for £1,000.
Had I now had the sense to go home, my father would have killed a fatted calf and I'd been happy. But shame opposed the best motions, and I thought I should be laughed at by my neighbours and friends for the failure of my enterprise. Since then, I have often observed how irrational is the common temper of mankind, viz., that we are not ashamed to sin, and yet we are ashamed to repent. More than 20 months had passed since my deliverance. With the aid of my ledger, having brought my mind a little to relish my condition, I began to make things as easy to me as I may. I set to enlarging my cave. I shored the roof with timber struts from the ship. I covered my stockade with rubble so that from the outside no man would see that it was inhabited. I made large shelves and hooks and ordered my possessions. These tasks completed, at the end of each day, I sat upon my new chair at my rough table and began to write a journal.
Every morning, I walk out with my gun for 2 or 3 hours if it does not rain, then employ myself to work till about 11 o'clock. Then eat what I have to live on, and from 12 to 2, lie down to sleep, the weather being excessive hot. And then in the evening, to work again, and finally here, to my table, to write my journal until darkness, which is upon me, so I must stop. What is that? It is stopped. Is my roof so weak? I don't know, because I cannot see in this dark. Tomorrow I shall collect the tallow from the goat I shot yesterday and make a candle. It comes again. Oh, I do not like this. The whole mountain is collapsing into my cave. I must get away.
I scrambled over my wall and onto the plain and watched in terror as stones and boulders cascaded down the mountain.
Even the ground is shaking. Oh, my heavens. What have I done? It comes again. Oh, I shall be destroyed and all my possessions.
I ran around, most excited at the thought of my dwelling and everything I own being buried. After the last shock had faded, I sat alone on the plain, and my spirits fell very low.
I may never live there again. The wind blows a hurricane. The sea is very enraged, and now the heavens open to spill a torrent upon me. All the elements are raised against poor Crusoe.
I sat in the storm for a long time, so great was my fear, until my shivering drove my thoughts to become more rational.
It must have been an earthquake. If I go back into my tent, I may escape the storm.
I crept back into my tent, but the rain was so violent that my tent was ready to be beaten down with it and drove me back into my cave.
It could fall on my head at any moment. So, I do not like this. But I can get dry and warm. Oh, my cave is turning into a lake. There is water around my feet. Rainwater, which cannot escape because of my new fortification. Damnation!
I was compelled to make a hole in my new wall to let the water out, which I had to hurry at, and which made me wet all over again. Finally, the work was done, and I returned to my cave.
The mountain seems to have regained its composure. I will have a sup of rum to fortify my spirit. Not too much, Crusoe. There is no more when 'tis gone. If the island is subject to these earthquakes, then I cannot live in my cave anymore.
I lay down on my bed, but my apprehensions made sleep impossible, and I listened to the rain. The next morning, the rain was unabated, and I did not go hunting. I ate some bread and grapes.
It is unusual chilly. Oh, I am cold. My bread store is low, which is another dismal consequence. I suppose I must reduce myself to one biscuit cake a day. Oh, what a miserable place this is!
so cold. Yet I sweat like a shire horse on a summer's day. To be sick and have no help. Please, Lord, do not forsake Robinson now.
I tried to pray, but I didn't know what I was saying. I slept fitfully and woke with a terrible ague. The fit held me for several hours, and I had a most terrible headache. I was so weak and very thirsty, yet I had not strength to stand up or get myself any water to drink or food to eat.
Stopped raining. The sun is high.
Oh, I must have slept a long time. I feel better. I shall go hunting later. What was that? I thought I saw someone. Must have been a reflection from the sun.
Robinson Crusoe.
Who are you?
Robinson Crusoe.
What are you doing on my island?
It is my island.
What do you want?
All the things I have shown you have not brought you to repentance.
What things?
Go to sea and you will know true unhappiness. God will not bless you. Of that you may be certain.
Father?
Your father knows very well where your interests lie, Robinson. How can you repay him so?
Mother! Are you here too?
You broke her heart.
I won't go. I swear.
You broke your promise and both our hearts.
How now, Bob? I warrant you're frighted.
Jack? Is that you?
You ought never to go to sea again.
I have this passion which I will not give up.
I would not set foot on the same ship as you again for £1,000. Farewell, Bob.
Jack! Don't go!
The first mate is sick with fever. There is a storm coming. We must turn back, Mr. Crusoe.
No, we cannot turn back for one man.
Ah, I never met a man so determined upon making his fortune.
Set your course, Captain. Let the storm do its worst.
And all were lost, save you.
I am sorry.
You have begged for mercy and sworn oaths and never kept but one.
I do repent.
All these things have not brought thee to repentance. You must pay for your sins, Robinson.
What can I do?
You can die.
No.
Was it dream, nightmare, or revelation? My fever still rages, and I am too corrupted to know. I must drag this water barrel nearer to my bed, so that if I am overcome again, I shall not suffer so much from thirst. It is my own fault. I turned my back on all who loved me. I ignored Providence. I left my mother and father to mourn over my folly. Now I am left to mourn under its circumstances. When the ship was preserved long enough for me to take what I required, did I give thanks? No, I did not. The growing of my corn had some influence upon me, but only as long as I believed it to be a miracle. It is done.
I lay down, and despite being delirious for the first time in many years, I prayed truly and with humility.
Lord, be my help, for I am in great distress. I don't want to die alone and wretched.
I slept fitfully and woke refreshed. The ague had gone, yet every bone ached with its memory. I took my gun, intending to go hunting, but I could get no further than the seashore before I had to sit down.
I would shoot one of those seals, but I have not the strength to lift my gun. Strange creatures they are, free of doubt or conscience. Where did they come from? Who made them? It must be God. And if God guides and governs everything, then nothing can happen without his knowledge. Therefore, he has appointed all this to befall me. But why? Because of your misspent life. The why is, why were you singled out? Why were you not destroyed long ago? That is the why.
I walked back to my cave, still very low and concerned at my condition. I began to look for some tobacco I'd taken from the ship, thinking it might assist my distemper.
Now, where are we? Here. A book?
Not just any book. A Bible. Still holding the tobacco, I opened it and was immediately arrested by what I read.
Call on me in the day of trouble, and I will deliver, and thou shalt glorify me. Most apt to my condition. Can God deliver me from this place?
I broke off some tobacco and began to chew. Then I sat down and read on, and the words made a great impression upon me, as indeed did the tobacco which half stupefied my thoughts. That night, I fell into a sound sleep and did not wake until noon, when I found myself exceedingly refreshed. I went out and shot a fowl, which I cooked and ate, and afterwards fell to contemplation.
God says he will deliver me, but deliverance from this island is exceeding unlikely. But if nothing is impossible for God, how may I be delivered? He will send a ship. There is no other escape except death. And he has spared me thus far and given me sustenance. Is that it? I have already been delivered. I have what I need, and I am spared. I have ignored the deliverance I have already received. God has saved me, and I have not glorified him.
I fell to praising God and giving thanks for my preservation.
I will lift up mine eyes unto the mountains, from whence cometh my help.
Over the next few days, my strength returned, and with it my spirits. I made a post where I could mark out a calendar of the days on my island, noting every seventh as the Sabbath, which I kept as a solemn fast, and spent my time prostrating myself before God, praising him and reading scripture.
A certain man went down from Jerusalem to Jericho and fell among thieves, which stripped him of his raiment and wounded him, and departed, leaving him half dead.
My life of hunting and manufacture became more measured. I found time for diversion. I caught a young parrot which I kept in a makeshift cage and resolved to teach him to speak.
Pretty Polly! I've brought you outside today, Paul, because I, being invested by the Almighty, as it were, governor of this island, have declared it a holiday. Why? Because it is the fifth anniversary of my landing here. And even though my way of living is no better than last year, having found God, I have great comfort within. Now, parrots may live as long as humans. So you and I will grow old together, Paul. God willing. Robinson Crusoe.
Time passed. I explored my island, mapped its potential. I found fruit and wild tobacco. I fished, shot fowl, and managed a small herd of goats. I made pots of a rude but usable kind. My life was pleasing and without surprise.
How now, Paul? I've been gone a few days. Have you missed me?
Crusoe.
What's that?
Crusoe.
You spoke, Paul.
You spoke!
Damnation!
You spoke, Paul! The first voice I've heard in years!
The years sped swiftly, but reconciled to my solitude, I now enjoyed my isolation. After all, I was master of all I surveyed. By the reckoning of my days, 25 years of my exile had passed, when I happened upon that which wrecked the ship of my serenity, as surely as the storm that had cast me ashore. It cannot be. Toes, heel, in every way the print of a man's naked foot in the sand. Just one, and no other, and no sign of a boat. How? Do they live here? How many? They may be watching. I must hide. I must get back to my stockade. Hurry!
In Robinson Crusoe by Daniel Defoe, dramatized for radio by Steve Chambers, Crusoe was played by Roy Marsden. Young Crusoe was Tom Bevan, Senior Wells, Gerard McDermott, the Captain, Christopher Wright, and Jack Ewan Thomas. Crusoe's father was John Rowe and his mother, Jenny Lee. Other parts were played by members of the cast. The director was Marion Nancarrow.